Welcome to Polycast, the civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Vian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host
King Morgan.
You're going to do the introduction, right?
Yep, certainly am.
Oh, usually we have hesitation.
What introduction?
You guys do an introduction on this show? How do you do your introduction?
I didn't really get a chance to listen to like two episodes before I came on, and
No, I prefer the guests who see that they have not listened to the show whatsoever before they came on.
He's a returning guest, actually, although
it's been a while.
It has been a long time. Welcome to the episode 194. I'm your guest host today, King Morgan. I'm joined along with our regular co-hosts, Dan Q.
No, I am not expecting this call about setting up a new online payment.
And hopefully we've got a nicely caffeinated Makalua.
I'm just going to embrace the madness over here, thanks.
And our YouTube superstar, Mr. Mad Jin.
Time to go take a nap.
And of course, last but not least, the Mian Team.
Greetings, subjects and future subjects.
Future vassals, what?
That is one kind of subject, but it is not the only kind of subject. I do not like to discriminate as such.
Before we get to our first topic, which I know Mackie is salivating to finally actually talk about, I just wanted to explain my introductory comment a little bit. See, Polycast has a U.S. and a U.K.-based number, and the U.S.-based number has been blessed with real calls, and so has the U.K. number in terms of actual legitimate calls to the show, at least one apiece. But you know that your number is truly being accepted in the world when you start receiving telemarketing calls. And in the last few weeks, our UK-based number has finally been validated as real by a UK-based telemarketer who talks about...
Sorry, are you expecting this call about setting up a new online payment? If you are not expecting this call, say 9 or press 9. Otherwise, if you wish to continue setting up a new online payment, say 1 or press 1 to continue. Goodbye.
How come we don't have interesting notes like that from North American-based telemarketers? They really need to step up their game, because that was entertaining. And also the accent on the woman was quite lovely.
If you're not expecting this call about setting it up, please hang up now.
There was no, I'm sorry, I don't understand, goodbye, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think us British are almost embarrassed to phone people up and try to sell them something. It doesn't seem to be done.
The first and the last time you were on the show, Morgan, it was episode 94, and this is episode 194. So we'll see you again on episode 294. Just a heads up.
We'll see you again in about 5 years, right?
Just saying.
Just let you know.
Clear your calendar.
Mark on your calendar now. We've been trying to get to for the past few podcasts and keeps getting cut for time because, well, we tend to ramble on. Autoclave over on the Sifanatics one started a topic about comparing Civ 5 to my favorite thing, Alpha Centauri. So he had just recently played Alpha Centauri after having played Civ 5 for about 700 hours and gave him some fresh perspective on Civ 5, actually. First thing he was going, hexes versus squares. He really likes the hexes. You know, I think all of us at first, when Civ 5 first came out, we were like, hexes? But it's not working out too badly.
Hexes better. Done.
What are you, Gordon Ramsay with the done thing?
Done.
There's just not a lot to say that squares are better than hexes.
It was all about the diagonal movement with squares.
Yeah, it was the cheating diagonal movement.
No, it's not cheating. It was in the game.
It was by design. You just move faster when going one direction. It wasn't, like, sensible, but it wasn't cheating.
It was there on purpose.
Then there's also good old-fashioned unit stacking, which, well, we don't have a unit stacking exactly anymore, although we can still stack bombers pretty well. Yeah. Now we just have Carpet of Doom instead of Stack of Doom. Takes a little more management, but you can still make a thing of doom.
Yeah, and in this case, Autoclave was actually missing the stacking. This is versus squares. He gave that to Civ 5, like plus one for Civ 5, but here it's plus one to Alpha Centauri. Because it really forces me to pay attention to where to place individual units.
I don't know. Is that necessarily him saying that that's a bad thing?
No.
That could be viewed as saying it's a good thing also.
I'm really,
from a design standpoint, you pick one or the other, sure, but a game that uses either can be really good. So it's not like necessarily...
I don't know. I wouldn't say forcing me to pay attention is a bad thing. Unless, of course, he doesn't want to pay attention, and then it would be a bad thing. But
yeah, because on unit stacking, you just have this huge stack of units, and it just, the game decides which one is going to attack. Whereas now with our one unit of tile, we have to pay attention and, you know, like put things in front to shield ranged units, keep the trebuchets and things towards the back. You have to pay at least some more attention to it other than get stack, aim at city.
Look, like in Civ games, score is really important in this thread, so I'm trying to give a point to Alpha Centauri, because a lot of it is, yay Civ 5, yay Civ 5, Civ 5 better, Civ 5 better, and I got kind of monotonous, so I decided to interpret this as giving plus one to Alpha Centauri.
Are you trying to give away the thread before Mackie gets to it?
No, I'm giving the quantity of the thread. Mackie is giving the quality.
Another big thing he noticed in was tall versus wide, because he was like, thank you, Uferax, for making tall cities a really strong and viable tactic, which I believe, referring to Civ 5, you can make that, because in the Centaur, it's very easy to set up, like, this grid pattern of a bunch of little cities, because you could just go exponential with all of your growth and everything. In other words, you only thought you did ICS in other versions of Civ.
Well, I think Civ 2 was pretty similar in that regard, and Civ 3.
Yeah, Civ 3 was pretty hardcore ICS.
Basically, everything before maintenance in Civ 4, I don't know that there was a better strategy than ICS spam.
Yeah, the killer thing in Alpha Centauri, you have the satellites, which I don't know if there's actually a top end of the counter. Maybe it's 255, but you can launch these ones that will add plus one food or energy or production to every city. You could sit there and you could spam out satellites, and then every city has like plus 99 or something ridiculous.
Redonkulous.
What I really liked about Alpha Centauri was the way that you could build on the oceans and the waters. Just have a huge grid. No need to worry about any kind of coastal invasions. Just fill it with cities.
Yep, sorry, you're not going past this city. Oh, God, can you imagine if it had the Civ 5 type of cities where you'd be firing at them?
Boat drives past, gets blasted.
Yeah, the boat, that ain't going nowhere.
He talks about the tech tree in Civ 5 being better than the Smack tech maze, but I'm not sure. The tech tree is one of the things I really dislike about Civ 5, because it's too linear.
We can get to internet without computers, something's not right.
Nah, that's just a label. I'm just talking it's way too linear. Like, there's no crossovers from Civ 4 where this little tooltip says, you know, this part of the tech tree is attached to that part of the tech tree, versus in Civ 5 where it's like, if you can't draw a direct line without crossing another line, it can't fit.
Yeah.
It was a mess.
Yeah, and Alpha Centauri had an interesting setting when you started the game where you could make it where you only got a certain selections of tech to pick from to research your next tech. It was semi-random in that case. After you play the game X number of times and you catch yourself always going up this certain path, like everybody straight to composite bows, you know, here, let's try a different play style to think differently.
That's what I don't like about a lot of the tech trees and really even games outside of Civ. You wind up with false choice where going one direction is the right direction almost every time or every time, to the point where you don't have to think about it. You just go there. That does hurt the experience a little bit. It really should be a hard choice, ideally.
Yeah, because in Civ 5, I keep finding myself, I go riding, go grab sailing if I'm on the coast, then go get composite boats to go smash who's ever on my island or continent. Maybe you take a slight diversion and grab something for a luxury resource you have, but it's the start every time.
Yeah, it does get boring. I don't mind the Mac tech tree. Maybe I'm forgetting it, but...
No,
he
couldn't figure out what to research for the next thing, but I'm pretty sure the game came with a printout thing that showed you that. Like,
what?
Yeah, it, well, 1999, did, guys, there were still, you know, physical media.
Once upon a time, there were manuals.
Yeah.
Now we have the internet.
There weren't PDF files.
You put this picture on your wall so you could see the tech tree in the game.
I had that. That was awesome. Yeah.
And after you play the game a few times, you start knowing, I got to go this way so I can go get plasma first. One thing we do not miss from the previous versions of Civ and from Alpha Centauri, embarkation, having to put the guys on the boats, transports.
What's a boat?
Well, okay, we still have to put bombers and fighters on a carrier, but that's nowhere near the micromanaging it took to move an army between continents.
I'm not sure that the previous system has actually had less clicks in total because of the stacking.
Mm.
Mm.
if you used a good waypoint system in Civ 4, for example, you could have all of your units go to one city with all of your boats and then load them in the aggregate.
Yeah, the waypoint was fantastic in previous versions of Civ. As you say, just load them all on, get all the transports in the city, load them up, and then off they go.
Yeah, well, there's also the fact that this is actually, I think, a little bit easier for the AI to understand.
Oh, yeah, and if you go with a one unit per tile model, you have no choice. You cannot do that kind of transport stuff. It'd just be a disaster.
Yeah.
Please build one transport to transfer one unit.
Yeah, no. And then protect that transport with other city units.
Yeah, but, see, now they come up, run into your fleet on your way over to them. At least they can only take a couple of units off you instead of half your army in one transport. Trading for in-game currency in Civ 5. He likes the trade caravans and the cargo ships, which you have to stop and think, do you want to send it to these city-states? Do you want to send it over here and get some extra science? But then they also get science, and, you know, instead of just...
The old style was, it was really nice, but I think the caravan is and the cargo ships are a vast improvement.
You actually make decisions in Civ 5 regarding trade, like... Rather than, hey, I'm going to open borders with a sea route or a road to the AI and then get trade. And if I have a bunch of coastal cities, maybe I'll build the Great Lighthouse and my auto-win button if I get past a certain number of cities for doing so. Wow. The trade is a lot more dynamic.
Well, in fairness, he's really now comparing Civilization V, Brave New World, to Alpha Centauri.
Well, yes, that's true.
True, but you don't see any of us complaining about that addition to Brave New World.
Well, Alpha Centauri had its opportunities for expansion. I mean, the hardest thing in this comparison is just that Alpha Centauri is old. And so a lot of things that have happened in gaming from then to now give Civ 5 an advantage from a design standpoint. Stuff just couldn't be done back then in some regard, or hadn't been thought of yet, depending on CPU limitations or just the progression of gaming in general. So yeah, there are going to be things that Civ 5 is going to be better in just because of that.
But not diplomacy.
Well, but not diplomacy.
Oh yeah, the Alpha Centauri. Here, let me kill everyone off except this one person who's my little bitch. Hey, I want to melt all the polar caps. Do you mind? No, I didn't think so. Because seriously, with the council and that, if you had a huge population, you dominate it. You got a bunch of votes. You're very easy to vote yourself in. Well, some things were a yes or no and not based on your number of people, but still.
I found it interesting that Autoclave said that Alpha Centauri diplomacy is as good as Civ 5 diplomacy.
Yeah, that's why I started laughing.
I don't think that's
really?
Enough,
okay? Yeah, how old is the game? How far have we progressed? Just not in diplomacy.
Given that, I would actually give that as like a plus one to Alpha Centauri.
If it's just as good and that old, then yeah, definitely.
The council was a good idea. You know, certain votes were divided into a simple yes or no. You couldn't overwhelm things with your sheer number of votes that you had from your population or whatever. Like when you get into the World Congress now in Civ 5, if you have all the city states on lockdown, it doesn't matter. You can pass anything you want. But then there were things like the polar caps or banning the planet busters and things like that where they were just simple yes or no votes. So, you know, even if there's somebody out there who's only one city.
I think diplomacy over the years is capped by AI in any game where you have a single player and AI and a multiplayer component. Because the more complicated and dynamic you make diplomacy, the worse you make the AI at diplomacy and strategy titles.
Well, it just depends. I mean, Civ 5 diplomacy has all sorts of diplomacy options that don't affect the game. You get handed a choice. Both choices equal the same thing.
Yeah, that's lame. I hate that.
Nothing happens.
You will pay for this in time. Screw you. Don't give me that.
So, like, actually, no, you won't, because no one cares what button you press, so why are you pressing a button?
Yeah, those button choices is kind of like if you have a so-called recycling program and you put out blue boxes inside a building, and then when it gets outside the building, it actually just all goes in the trash.
Interlocking mechanics, though, too, because if you make the AI more aggressive, then you might start seeing players screw with the warmongering menace to the world stuff and getting AIs to dogpile AIs all game.
Wait, we don't do that now?
Like, worse. Like, you could trivialize that, potentially.
We're good at trivializing things on this show.
Mm. Speaking of trivial things, spies.
Oh.
But
well, The Spies and Observatory were basically the model from the Diplomats and or Spies from the previous Civ games, where you could actually do things like buy out cities and stuff like that.
Hello, Civ 2.
Yeah. Just let me wonder my Diplomat, actually, hey guys, you want to join me? I have a pile of cash.
Yeah. I think the Spies and Smack were fun, but they were not balanced.
Yeah, you had that thing, and it would show you the percent chance you could get away with if you just tried to get away clean, or the percent chance if you decided you wanted to try and frame somebody else, which was actually handy at times.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was totally law, that peacenik over there that stole your technological secrets. Yep, mm-hmm.
They're the ones that bought your city that came to us. Wait, what?
Well, not that part. It was only when you were stealing tech, I think you got that.
We spoke of quantity versus quality before. Autoclave said, Smack has more gameplay mechanics available, and they can be quite devastating. Do I miss these things in Civ 5? I think the Civ 5 implementation is quite potent and not overpowered. So the juxtaposition of those two things, I'm pretty certain he's given the nod to Civ 5.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, the Civ 5 spies are good. I just sometimes wish I had more of them, but...
As fun as the lousy BS was of previous spies, it doesn't really...
Yeah, let me go poison all your water supply till your city starves itself.
Before wasn't too bad, but before 4 it was really iffy.
I think spies in Civ 5 is just very thin and pretty weak for an implementation. There's just sheer lacking of stuff to do with them. I mean, yes, they've gotten better with Brave New World and stuff like that, where you can actually have diplomats and yada, yada, yada. But really, you sit there and you steal somebody's tech for the whole game.
Yeah, I agree. It could use work, but I don't want to see it become, again, the kind of nonsense it has been in the past.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's just more the question of if there would be more useful things to do with them other than tech steal or the random go hang out in city-states to make sure that you get them in time.
Yeah, Civ 5 spy mechanics have improved since they were initially introduced, but that's like going from a 20% to a 40% on a test. It is improvement.
But you still fail.
Yeah.
Social engineering versus social policies. He's not sure which he likes more. They have different values. They have different, you know.
They do two different things.
Yeah, the social engineering in Alpha Centauri is very flexible. You can change what you're doing as the game goes on if you've researched the appropriate technology, whereas the Civ 5 social policies, you're locked into this kind of civilization. You can't really change it very much. You know, if you get into a later game where you think, well, I should have gone warmongering. I mean, you can take the ideologies, like you could take autocracy or something like that if you need to add war in, but you can't change the whole, like, fundamental nature.
If we were talking about social engineering versus social policies before Brave New World, when they had this, hey, you cannot mix and match these particular social policies unless you want to just completely erase this progress, you know, like rationalism and piety, for example, then this would be an easier comparison for me.
Yeah.
But for now, especially when, okay, we're comparing social engineering versus social policies, we're trying to compare like things here, and of course the games are not the same.
Yeah.
So I think it is a more difficult question now
because
it takes into account the greater gameplay mechanics, purpose, feel, etc. of the games.
Well, it's also the social policies themselves are no longer important for the impact on game or diplomacy or anything anymore. Now they're just like they help you towards your empire building, but it's now the ideologies that are the the push.
So if that actually said social engineering versus social policies / ideological tenets, because, yeah, you could say, oh, well, you accumulate culture and you can use that culture accumulation to adopt either one or the other once you get to the industrial age or modern era. But it's not the same when you're just talking about strictly social policies now.
Yeah, he does point out a little bit further down about there was a thing going on with certain bits of social engineering. If you had it and you had, like, he gives the example of if you had a planned economy and some other guy had a free market economy, that you'd get into conflict pretty quickly because those were sort of opposing ideologies. And we get that in the game now in Brave New World with your autocracy. Somebody takes freedom, they're like, I hate you.
Well, and quite frankly, in Alpha Centauri, just by the very nature of the factions versus the civilizations, there already is, based on your faction and someone else's factions, right away, before you have said or done anything in the game, there is already this either positive or, in particular, negative disposition between them, just because of the nature of the game and the backstory that you have in Alpha Centauri that you don't have in Civ 5.
Yep. That's like the...
Super geeks versus tree huggers. Yeah, they're not going to like each other.
Or the many other games in space have the predisposition based on race. So,
yeah.
Pretty common thing. On to tile improvement.
Yeah.
Tile Improvement Minigame. Oh, you got to give the full title. That's
Tile Improvement Minigame.
Wow. The minigame, huh?
Oh, yeah. He's saying that in Civ 5, there's not so many choices about what would be the optimal improvement. You got a palace or a horse, you put a pasture on it. You have a hill most of the time, unless you're the Inca, you're going to put a mine on it. But yeah, in Alpha Centauri, because of the way the terrain is, depending on how close the cities are together, whether it's a dry area or... because it had a little, you know, microclimate thing going on. Some areas were dry, some areas were had more rainfall. So the more rainfall area, you put farms over there. Dry area, maybe that's where you do mining. Is it rocky enough to do mining? There was a lot more that you had to go on with this. And then there was other special improvements, like the boreholes and big solar panel things for energy. Seriously, you actually had to think about what you were doing, not just aim worker, make farm, make mine, chop tree.
Yeah, well, that's the whole terraforming thing.
Yeah, I was about to say. And then there's the whole, hey, do I want to elevate this or sink everybody into the ocean?
Terraforming is going to be a little harder in Civ 5 just because of the way the engine works.
And also the fact that Alpha Centauri is based on, hey, guess what?
Yeah.
You're already in space.
We're not sci-fi.
Yeah, so terraforming doesn't seem like a strange idea.
Exactly.
It's interesting, though, like, Civ 5 would probably benefit more than Smack did from a dynamic improvement model because of the ICS versus not issue.
This does not mean, audience, that we are saying, are we indirectly advocating for a return to global warming effects?
No.
I don't mean that kind of we don't mean that kind of terraforming.
When I say dynamic tile improvements, I do not mean that your tile improvements become desert fairy magic. No. Not so much.
Aw, can't we have magic?
No DFM.
Desert fairy magic. That sounds like something that might work in a role-playing game, not a strategy game.
Apparently it worked in Civ 4 for people.
There are literally some things that could do with a terraformable component.
Yes. Canals especially. Why not? It has such strategic implications.
That's fine. We've talked about canals before on the show. I'm fine with that. I mean, that terraforming... there's terraforming and then there's terraforming.
Yeah.
Building canals versus let's turn desert into grassland. Say what?
And turn tundra into desert and then into grassland.
Yeah. This tile could use a hill.
So expansion and growth restriction.
Yeah.
I mean, this is actually the most interesting of all the criteria, actually.
You don't have luxury resources, but you're able to actually divert part of, because it still has all of your money going into the same pot. You could actually split some for culture and things, and so forth. You could do the same thing here. You could put some of it up to happiness, so you could prevent that, and you get this balance, and yeah.
Oh, remember reassigning citizens to be the Elvis impersonators? And
You have two ways to use some of your budget to allocate to happiness, basically. Or you can turn some of them into, well, they're not Elvises, they're something else, more like counselors or something crazy like that.
He doesn't want to explain his history of drone riots.
Well, considering one of the options for quelling a drone riot is nerve stapling, which, oh yeah, that's an atrocity, by the way. I'm going to piss off your neighbors.
Thread / blog by Mega Bear Span, and it is yet another strategy walkthrough, this one on Poland. It's impressive. The first part is the usual breakdown of the units, including the claim that there's a Lancer worth building. I don't know, man.
No, there's not.
I don't know, man. I mean, the Winged Hussar is cool, but... And then a walkthrough in terms of basically how to play Poland. And because he advocates taking honor early, I approve, LOL. basically focus on culture to maximize solidarity, take honor early because lols, and then you have your industrial era stuff.
Yes, solidarity being the unique ability of Poland, where you receive a free social policy when you advance to the next era.
Yes.
Which, as he later points out in the thread, you know, after Ancient, you typically are going to have 7 eras unless the game ends early. So expect to be able to adopt an entire extra policies tree worth of policies. That doesn't mean, of course, you get to adopt the whole extra tree, just another tree's worth.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But if you beeline theology, you could easily finish honor way before everybody else gets anywhere near it.
He's missing, though, the best thing about Poland is to open up Liberty and go straight for the 50% on the settlers, because you can get three really quick settlers out and still fill out the tradition tree before turn 100. It just gives you such an amazing start. I think that is the major benefit of Poland.
And move those settlers into positions where they can get access to horses, horses, and more horses?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You've got a huge snowball effect going on there. Get your ducal stables up. You can produce units, buildings. An amazing start from Poland, in my opinion.
And, of course, as soon as you open Renaissance, you get
Renaissance
rationalism. It's basically, as soon as you hit Renaissance, you get a free rationalism opener.
That's incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
The unique Polish stable replacement, plus 15% production, and plus 15 experience for mounted units, and each pasture worked by this city produces plus 1 production and plus 1 gold.
Yeah, he talks about if you are going up that line towards, you know, metallurgy and all that fun stuff, then you might as well just keep plowing through to artillery. And frankly, if you're getting the free social policies as you go, you're not really going to be falling behind, because you can just push into rationalism with the free stuff and get it finished a lot sooner.
Yes, and these free policies do not increase the cost of the next policy, nor do they reset the culture counter, which would have been a terrible oversight in the design. So fortunately, that was avoided.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a real choice. It doesn't matter which victory condition you want to go for. Having extra social policies is always a good thing.
When Mega Bears fan describes them as the most progressive civilization, in that you don't get any advantages that another player can't also have, but you will have more advantages sooner.
Yeah.
And that is the key. When you have the opportunity to have something sooner, back to the snowball effect, it's like, hey, you want to invest in a retirement savings plan or invest in pretty well almost anything, the sooner you can put the money in and you can leave the money there. I'm generalizing big time. Don't take this as like personal financial advice, but it's the potential for it to grow to be exponential. So the sooner, the better. And that's so key with Civ.
Yeah. Of course, he also, under the domination victory side, he talks about using the free policies to get in through to commerce and get into mercenary armory for LKs, and then using those to upgrade to wing hussars. And yes, yes, that is very, very amusing to do.
And if you're constructing your Ducal stables, and he says, like, if you're working more than one pasture in a city, then this building will generate a net positive of gold. And speaking of LKs, the Lanch Connects, that's what you need, is gold in order to buy them. So, hey, look at that. It's all tied together.
LKs, LKs for days. And you just keep spamming them.
And like any of the other articles, Mega Bears fan also talks about the opposite side of the coin. In other words, what happens if you're facing Poland as an enemy? He said, pretty much the only thing you can really control is Poland's access to horses. If Poland is one of your immediate neighbors, then consider trying to claim the valuable pasture resources before he can annex and improve them, and prevent him from allying with city-states that have horses to keep his mounted army in check. I think the former of those is a little easier than the latter. Or once you realize Poland has horses, then, like he says, you need to think about counter units, spears, pikemen, to try to keep them in check early in the game to try to limit their snowball effect.
Or just wipe them.
Well, it could up to and including...
Well, that will certainly limit the snowball.
Wipe them before they get to hussars.
When they get the winged hussars, it's kind of like, remember in Civilization IV when medieval war was generally a bad idea? Yeah, you probably want to avoid Poland at that era, unless you are, you know, an era beyond them and actually have the ability to go on the offensive against them. And he also talks about that, to the end, about essentially, you can, as yourself, just like someone else playing as Poland could be, going for a victory condition other than domination. If they are going for domination, however, Poland is likely to make some enemies during the course of the game. Hello, understatement.
Really?
Yeah, I know, really. This means it shouldn't be too hard to build up allies to work against them. That is assuming, though, that you have also not been a warmonger to the point of pissing off a lot of the rest of the planet. So if you haven't done that, in other words, at least try to get them to realize that, you know, I'm bad, but they're worse. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. So you can try to build up a coalition to attack them, or use the World Congress to embargo them and ban luxuries that they own.
Or just out-tech them and nuke them.
Why does everything come back to nukes, Phil? Oh, wait, sorry, that was magic. My bad.
You know what I would answer.
Warm nuclear huts for everyone.
Nukes are always the answer.
But yeah, you could always just make the great rush for Great War Infantry to get good solid counter against those wing tussers.
People listening might be wondering, why are you guys talking about Mega Bears Fan's article on Poland when you haven't talked about Morocco? We're going to save Morocco for whenever the next one of these guides comes out, and then we'll talk about two in one episode.
What?
Like we did on episode 190 when we talked about Brazil and Assyria, and most recently we talked about his Indonesian strategy back in episode 192.
Apparently we get email. I think that's very controversial. And we even get email karma. Huh?
Email karma?
We did get an email from karma. It's not about karma, but oh well. It says, unless I missed it, I don't think there was a discussion of using autocracy for cultural victory when you delay great artists a little bit and then use cult of personality. I think it's the name of the policy, getting a tourism boost on the allies in war. I did it once with Pedro, Immortal and or Deity, can't remember, and he had bribed for war a lot, sometimes investing a lot to get friends at war, so that when reaching the late game, the world was a huge ball of hate. Then a last bribe wave, and everybody was at war with everyone. The bonus stacks, meaning if you have four common enemies with the Civ, you get 4x the tourism bonus. It gets crazy. So what do we think?
I think this is the hilarious way to go for culture.
I'm going to win by being awesome while you all fight each other.
Yeah, pretty much.
Awesome, you're gonna because love I got you all to fight each other, you devolve the world into a complete cesspool of hate and warfare, and you win a cultural victory for it. That is fundamentally awesome.
That sounds like an autocratic victory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just conceptually, it's amazing, though. It's like in Civ 4 when you're going for a diplomatic victory, and on the turn of the vote, you just nuke the crap out of your opposition, so they don't have enough opposition to stop you. That's a diplomatic victory. This is just like that. It's a nice touch.
It's not quite like that. This one requires other people to nuke each other rather than you.
Well, sure.
Okay, so it's a little less personal in the nuke delivery, but nukes are flying, and you know.
You could still subsidize the nukes, too. So yeah. That's all good.
True.
It's great tourism. You're going to be going to visit all those foreign countries just as there's a huge war going on.
Hey, that's look, you have what?
Paris.
I bring you wonderful burned runes. Your cities, they make wonderful art pieces. Thank you.
Maybe it's the other way around. Like, the rest of the world is so destroyed that your country is the only one that's viable to visit.
So we could call that the default victory win, then.
Yeah, sure.
We're better than you, because you're all dead.
Sounds a bit like a pseudo-time victory, but I'll allow it.
But yeah, I think when we talked about culture, we mentioned getting people to fight each other, but going that far, where you're getting everybody to fight everybody, and just sitting back, enjoying it, yeah, that's pretty good.
I suppose there's no more ridiculous than sacred sites tourism victory, is it? Just as crazy.
Well, some of the victory conditions in and of themselves are a little bit silly as victory conditions, but that's good for the game.
It mixes it up a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, as long as you have options on your cheese.
Well, yeah, going back to sacred sites, you've got sacred sites by domination, haven't you? You wipe everybody out except the last guy, and then either bomb a great musician dude or win it with your sacred sites. I don't know, ridiculous. Quite funny and cheesy, but a bit unlikely.
I think if you've dominated the world, you can basically do anything you want, at least in theory. I will be the most culturally adept civilization because I will be the only civilization. Sure, why not?
You have won an everything victory.
Speaking of everything victories, people also post comments and threads about the show.
What?
Why? Why are you talking about this?
I thought for a moment Mackie was going to call me Willis. This is back from episode 191, and Matt Zed had started the discussion off, another excellent episode. He thanks us for the tips on watching Polycast on YouTube for a transcription, although I notice that sometimes the closed captioning, quote-unquote, gets a little ... off. Unquote. Well, yeah, that's part of the fun, honestly. I mean,
the entire blog on the closed captioning on YouTube gets hilariously wrong.
Yep.
I noticed this week's forum talk focused on the 2K forums and Reddit. Out of curiosity, how were the forum threads for forum talk selected? So I had just said that these topics are selected in a similar fashion to most other segments. I scour a number of forums of Civilization discussion with a focus on Civ 5, but not exclusively, and I'm looking for conversations on those that have been receiving recent attention and are on something that has not been covered on the show before, or at least not in the same manner. And I know we've talked about this season returning to some topics we talked about before with Civilization 5, but topics we discussed before Brave New World or even the first expansion pack for the game Gods and Kings. The big thing, though, that kind of struck me, and this person says he's been listening to Polycast since 2013, that here's what I'd like to have more of. Please don't take this the wrong way, he's saying, but there should be more Civ 5-focused strategy discussion in Polycast, and strategy discussion is in all caps, so I had to kind of yell it. Consult Mad Jin or the Mian team or somebody.
Just somebody. Call somebody else.
Or somebody.
I don't know who somebody is, but I...
Just go ask somebody.
Now, what I said, and I'm going to condense this a little bit. In terms of topic selections, I always welcome suggestions from not only panelists, but also from anybody who's listening to the show, or quite frankly, anybody who pretends to listen to the show and gives us a suggestion. It is true that there was no Civ-specific strategy segment on episode 191, but, say, on episode 190, almost half of the runtime was Senate, and that is our specific segment on Civilization strategy. But we also talk about Civilization strategy otherwise in forum talk, for example. I don't think there was very much in that particular forum talk, but it's all about a balance. I brought up last year's listenership survey that we had, where more respondents actually favored the inclusion of forum talk over Senate, which also showed considerable favor for news as well as research lab. So we're trying to appeal as to many people as possible, but at the same time recognizing that if we try to appeal to too many people too often, then we're probably not going to end up pleasing anybody.
Hold on. I think he's asking for a very specific kind of strategy discussion that we do rarely do. That's normally covered almost exclusively in the strategy sub-forums of Civ Fanatics. I don't know about other forums, but that's pretty much the only place it shows up in Civ Fanatics. Like, we're talking granular openings and some situational things that would cause you to alter your decision-making there. Or, like, you know, for example, a breakdown of the four-city tradition opener or something along those lines. We rarely cover that kind of specific strategy. Civ 4, for example, would be your growth rate versus cottage tiles worked. When should you switch from a farm to a cottage? We don't do that whole lot of that on the show, to be fair, but, and I think that's what he's talking about.
You could wander on over to Beyond the Monument! Where would you do that sort of thing?
Yeah, I guess that's my point, that's probably what Larwin is talking about when he's saying that he wants to see more strategy on the show.
Oh, yes, that's from Larwin, not Matt Zed.
Yeah.
Although we do talk about strategy when it comes up in the forums.
Yeah, so we do sometimes. But we certainly don't do a whole lot of that stuff. We do not have a segment that consistently represents what you would find over on Strategy and Tips.
Yeah.
Part of that, at least in my own mind, maybe subconsciously more than consciously, is that a conversation like that benefits from not just text, but also images and video, which we do not do.
Yeah. He still refuses.
We do not do, but Madjin does.
Okay, whoa, I still refuse.
Oh, Maggie's done it before.
Yeah?
It's the royal we, actually, that...
We are not amused.
We do not like your picture.
We will be having none of this newfangled video thing.
Lauren also says it was epic to hear that Firaxis people, not just people, but Firaxis people, because, you know, they're better than regular people, I guess, I don't know.
Clearly.
Firaxis people on Polycast. I gotta admit, that was really nice to hear from them back in the day. Wasn't that long ago? It was last summer. Come on. Thanks for that. But I said, hey, you're welcome. We hope to have one or more Firaxians back on the show this year as well. But they are busy, and there is an emotional scar factor that they have to recover from, and, you know, it's just... Aaron90495 says, I suppose you kind of already touched on this, but where exactly do the topic selections for the show come from? And essentially, it's more of an art than a science. There's this thing called bullcrapology that helps a lot, I gotta tell you. He does say, as a follow-up point, could I request that on the next episode you talk about what you think is next with the Civ series, with the complete edition releasing soon, and that you talk about the corresponding patch notes, assuming there is one announced by then, to go along with the CE release. And we did talk about Civilization V Complete, as well as the new free DLC for the game, and I think it's fair to say any patch notes are published that kind of rockets to at the top, if not near the top, of the topic list for the next episode.
Hey, we'd never talk about that.
There is also more conversation on episode 191, but those are the highlights. Recorded for episode 163 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, Mad Jin, and Smallfish.
Now I completely understand the whole Austria being overpowered from having her as an opponent. I get down on my continent, I look over, and the other continent is pretty much a sea of red. Oh, and Aegir's kind of clinging on here at the bottom. And I'm like, well, I don't think I'm going to be taking that one over. New game.
Please, I'm not a city-state.
Speaking of Austria, I haven't really seen her, like, marrying city-states recently in my games at all.
Maybe it's the lack of money. The AIs eventually build up the money for it now, especially since they spend more. But, yeah, she's not as dangerous as she was before when it comes to that.
It's interesting you bring up the gold. In the same game I mentioned, I'm at turn, I'm around near 200, and my nearest neighbor is Pakal. But we've been extremely friendly. I've been very careful. I was very careful not to settle up in his grill. And most powerful military on the planet. And in the last few turns, I contacted him, and he's got 10,000 gold, making 100 some a turn. And I go talk to some of the other opponents. Okay, let's talk to Genghis Khan. Minus 63 gold a turn. That's nice. So I also had Ethiopia in this game. Minus 34 gold a turn. It's like I'm noticing a pattern here that the difference between the haves and the have-nots was pretty staggering. I was somewhere in between. Interesting to see how the rest of the game plays out. I know I need to manage my diplomacy properly. I do not want Pakal to suddenly decide to backstab me.
Spend all 10 gold in one go.
So it's like one of those things where he declares war on another civ, and then that civ's like, hey, Dan, you want to be friends? No. I get a declaration of friendship with him, and the weakest civ on the planet's like, ooh, you shouldn't get so close to them. We could have a problem. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, the problem is I could stand on your head and go
squish you.
That is one reason to bring vassals back. If an AI is about to get completely wiped out, it should go shopping around for its friends and go, you know what? We're screwed. You want it?
Those kind of AIs usually get denounced a lot before they die.
Whether you should move your settler or leave it in the same place?
We all know the answer to that, don't we?
Oh, yes, we all know the answer to that. Especially if we take a gander at the article, it's kind of the opposite, actually. But yes, Greg Tito, as it is on the title heading. Basically, the article is detailing an argument that started between the design team as to whether or not you should move your settler at the start. Even there, they have some pretty large disagreements. So they actually did some tests and found that sometimes moving your settler is better than not moving your settler.
Really?
We really got into an argument about half of them were like, oh, that's a good idea. And everyone's like, you fool.
Yeah, pretty much. My interesting take on this is if you're basically running a risk-reward gamble right at the start. And I don't know. Can you win from the start you have? And then is it worth moving? It might be. But you have incomplete information and don't know.
To me, I think the biggest question is at your starting location, and I'm personally talking Civ 5 here, and I'll explain why that's Civ 5 specifically in a moment. Do I settle in place, or do I move once and still settle on turn 0, but in that immediate space, that immediate hex that I can get to? And I think that there are rare situations where the answer is, well, yes. Like, for example, moving one hex over now gets you onto the coast.
Yes.
Particularly if there is fish or whale or pearls there. I think a bigger question then becomes, though, and they kind of get into it, right, is if you wait one or even two or three turns trying to find that ideal location. And I very much enjoyed the part about they actually restarted the test because barbarians became an obstacle.
Yeah, yes, Danny.
Berg, would you like to win the game today?
How it was described was by Greg Tito summarizing, it ruined the test's economic focus. Okay, an interesting phrasing. How about it ruin the focus of still having a game to play? The test that they ran in the simulator, it ran for 100 turns. It was dual quick-speed continents map with two civilizations, where the other civilization, Venice, was specifically on another continent. And Venice was chosen by the lead producer for Brave New World, Ed Beach. He was also the lead producer on Gods and Kings. He says, I knew it was going to be a while before they started grabbing land from me. And I'm thinking, well, Ed, if they're on another continent,
good, yeah.
Doesn't matter what civ they are, but okay, that's fine. He played as Brazil. Said this should be one that didn't have any early game benefits to skew results. Okay.
Okay.
He ran the first 100 turns of three possibilities. Founding city on the first turn, moving and founding on turn two, and not moving but founding on turn two, which is described as the control state. So for me, the big possibility, which was I would distinguish actually between founding city on the first turn where you actually started and founding the city on the first turn by moving one. That would have been a little more interesting, although I understand if you're going to try to test this, having only three possibilities, the more possibilities you have, the bigger the issue becomes of just how meaningful your results happen to be. But quite frankly, the one where you are not moving but one turn delay, didn't move at all, and then you waited a turn to found. Apparently the results were devastating, and I'm thinking, I don't think that comes as a surprise to anybody. If you're going to delay founding, I'm assuming you're freaking moving.
Yeah.
But it provides
a clear standing
picture.
In place and going, la, 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 la.
No, no, it provides a clear picture of exactly how much you lose by delaying that settlement compared to settling it one turn sooner. It's very significant over time. That's exactly the point. So when you move, you need to be moving to a better start that's better by enough to offset that.
Mm-hmm.
Pushing it if you want to try to move three turns, that's just a little bit too much. Tweak it, but don't go exploring.
I've done it with five turns at least of moving.
Wow.
Because you have no food, like starting in the middle of a marsh surrounded by hills.
Yeah.
That's what the no FU game button is for.
Yeah. There's a reason to move. And your start better be sucky.
Yeah, your start better be sucky, and you better see something that makes it not sucky.
That, yes, right there, yes.
But it could lose a turn or two making that move, depending on where your starting unit is and how if you move it and then you see better land.
Oh, I gotta laugh. I gotta laugh. I'm sorry. I gotta laugh.
What?
Does laughing also require you to, like, hit your keyboard?
Yeah, because this is just actually funny. At turn 48, what is a sentence that I should never finish on if I say at turn 48?
Perhaps the Great Library?
Yeah. Seriously? You finished the Great Library at turn 48? On quick speed? Like, it should have been done 18 turns ago, at least. Ed Beach doesn't know how to play his own game. What?
That is true of most developers, though. In Ed Beach's defense, most developers do not play the games that they create at a high level. It's rare to see it.
Although, for Dennis, I have to say this. For Dennis, you're doing it wrong.
Dennis, people wondering what's going on, because Dennis says that he never, ever, ever moves Startling Settler. He does not even consider it, not even after this test result.
Yep. He's just doing it wrong.
Facepalm.
That just goes to absolute statements are absolutely problematic. I will never move is, to me, as bad of an answer as I will always move.
Yep. Especially the design purpose of your game is to have these types of choices in the game and make decisions based on your information that matter. So going against evidence as to what is a stronger play is very questionable in a strategy title.
In response to the article on The Escapist, Courtney Woodbury said, I've never played this series, but I think if it should never be done, that it wouldn't be an option in the first place.
You would think so, but that's not true. You wind up with these random options in games that are so terrible that you never do it, and they don't get balanced.
So in addition to Dennis, who was producer, by the way, on Brave New World, along with Ed being the designer, Pete Murray was also a part of the article. Marketing? See, Ed's response is about moving is possibly. He says, maybe just tweak your settler one hex and still settle on the first turn. I think of the three, I'm more on the side of Ed on that decision, not about the great library thing that Magin mentioned, but, you know, anyway. Pete is like probably, that he would probably move. The only thing worse than an obviously bad Civ start is a Civ start that's mostly bad, but has a good city position just a few hexes away.
Yep, the worst thing you could do is actually accept what the game gives you.
Actually, no, the worst thing you could do is not settle in place and not move, and then settle in place next turn. That.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Okay, that's just blatantly silly.
Yeah. Then that's basically not playing for a turn, so yeah.
Yeah, if you want to make your game harder, there you go.
It's true.
Favorite response to this article from The Escapist was from Mark Sanders. Why do people throw tizzy fits just because someone doesn't want to play the game like them? Mark, it's not quite that. You see, it's people not wanting to play the game like you, and then they have the nerve to tell you that.
And have an opinion about it.
Because people on the internet are wrong, and they have to be told.
Those silly internet people. But to answer the question, should you move or should you not move? The answer is always move your warrior. If you find something that looks better, go there. If you find that there's way better stuff just over the other hill, you might want to move.
There's a river right over there. You might want to move.
If you find out it's garbage, don't go anywhere.
Moving onto a hill has got to be a very powerful start as well, because you can get your scouts out quicker. Extra one production is very, very powerful. It was interesting to see that if you miss building the Great Library, you're going to have a really bad time. It's going to set you back a huge amount, according to the article.
Well, particularly when Venice, in this case, finished it just before them. Like, there's constructing a wonder and not getting it, and then there's constructing a wonder and not getting it. How many turns did you sink into constructing this and not getting it? And in this case, it was a lot, except the one last turn, and Venice got it. And, well, yeah, in that particular case, you're kind of hosing yourself, aren't you?
Yeah, you just lost a lot of hammers on that, versus just blatantly ignoring building it in the first place.
I think on the level they were playing, you probably don't need the Great Library.
Probably not. Knowing that turn 30 is the rough average for Deity, Immortals only slightly behind it. Emperor, you can usually see it go in the 30s to maybe a little later on the 40. So I would suggest that this is King or Emperor, because even Emperor AIs like Venice would, I think, just due to the way that it's coded, it would probably go to Optics before Great Library Building. I hesitate to say Prince because you can get really far ahead of the AI on Prince, and they don't necessarily build the wonders.
It'd be quite nice as well to see a test or something done of how quickly to settle your second city.
Yeah, that's a better test.
I think you'd get a far bigger impact from getting a second city in quick as possible. I do wonder where the tail-off is. I mean, could you get a third and a fourth in? How many quick cities is optimal? In one of the Game of the Months on Civ Fanatics, I moved at least five turns out the jungle, because there's just no way you're settling on the coast in the middle of the jungle, no hills, no nothing. Right, up we go. And of course, as soon as you come out the jungle, they're beautiful land.
Mm. Well, yes, mapmakers in Game of the Month have a long history of doing some pretty lolly stuff with their maps.
Yeah,
they do. Yes.
So, Morgan, what was the end result of that effort then?
I don't think I finished that game. Quite embarrassed.
Oh, that's why you stopped the story there. Okay.
Yeah.
Five turns. It was a great, wonderful land. What he failed to mention is that the Huns were already there and were looking at a settler longingly.
Yeah, that's always the problem. There's always a nasty barb camp exactly where you want to settle.
Longingly, you imagine?
Yeah.
What is this, a romance podcast?
No, they're waiting for him to settle the city.
They're looking, oh, there's a free worker.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 441-221-288-7659. That's 441-221-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
That's what they should be doing. For when you buy a game in a store rather than on Steam or something, you should get all these fun tech tree and art and stuff like that. I mean, granted, it's all going to be useless like 20 minutes later when they patch it, but, you know.
Or you get the expansion or add-on, and then they've added a bunch of new text and things like that.
That actually brings back a very vivid memory of, in a Civilization 1 game, I am losing a considerable amount of money because my citizens are unhappy, and I can't figure out how to increase the happiness. So I go and I read the manual to learn how to do that. There was no looking up things on to interwebs. Kids today.
To finish up with this one-liner, I wish we got a sequel to Alpha Centauri, but currently EO holds the rights to them, and they are not willing to sell it to Firaxis. Full stop.
Well, technically, they're more like they're not willing to sell it to 2K.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying.
Although, to give some people hope, 2K's been shutting down development studios all over the place lately, and EA wanted to buy them a while ago. So, you know, 2K continues the death spiral. Maybe EA will buy them.
That's supposed to give us hope.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, for this little thing called SimCity.
Because if EA buys them, then Firaxis will be part of the
evil empire.
Yeah, and then the IP of Firaxis will have it.
You're not trying us and vomit it up like the SimCity was.
But on that premise, imagine you're assuming that Electronic Arts would keep Firaxis as we know Firaxis, though.
Would not happen.
Yeah, they would totally not be executive meddling.
Yeah, they're totally not. Like, Sid, so, about that leaving us.
I don't know, I think Firaxis is probably pretty safe. I mean, if you look at Steam, they got, what, 60,000 players a time playing Civ 5.
Well, no, Civ and XCOM would probably both be safe. Firaxis would be not necessarily safe. They'd definitely keep the IP, not necessarily the people behind it.
But that would ultimately slaughter these series.
Well, yeah, obviously.
So, yeah, I don't know that saying that there's hope in that regard is appropriate.
I can provide false hope, right?
Sure.
You do realize the first key to providing false hope is to not point out that it's false hope, right?
True.
This has been episode 194 of Polycast. We're all crazy here as always. I'm still Markalo, and of course with me is Dan Q.
Do you move your settler or not move your settler, so help you, Sid?
Me and team.
I am working on a way to nuke the underwater cities and smack.
You get smacked around for that, for the council.
LOL.
Imagine.
Womp womp. Womp womp. Womp womp.
Is that a verbal response? You're just making up your own jingle.
It was verbal, Mac. It wasn't language, but it was verbal.
And our guest today, King Morgan.
I always move my settler.
Yeah, I called Phil. And I called Mackie, too, afterwards.
Often she doesn't forget, too, but still doesn't show up until a little bit.
Oh, no, she decides to be late on episodes that I'm going to record just so I give her a call every other Saturday. You know, she likes it.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think that's a fair conclusion to make in this case. If she really didn't want to be called, dang, she'd show up on time.
She showed up on time last time.
Yeah.
And I wasn't here.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not the right one.
If you were looking for the mute button, you are correct. You did not hit the right button. We heard you.
I didn't do anything for like 2 or 3 minutes and suddenly, blah!
Yeah, just when you thought you could get around the ad.
I'm going to have Mac and repeat going, blah, blah.
Oh, you actually went to what kind of a segue is that? You didn't even mention outer space or something.
It's okay, let's not focus on the segue. Just go. Is that a good segue? Did I do a good
too
job?
Late. You said everything.
Phil, it was an okay segue until you asked the question. Have you learned nothing from me?
I actually don't think it was that good of a segue, but it was amusing, so I did it.
Like, every time he does Beyond the Monument, people still think maybe he'll actually do a Civ LP.
What?
Well, okay, so Matt just said every single time Matt does Beyond the Monument, he is giving false hope.
That's true.
I think Imagine's sound, that was the sound effect for raising your eyebrow. Remember you saying, Mackie?
This has been episode 194 of Polycast. God.
You forgot your name.
I had to explain to my boy what a tape was the other day. I haven't got a clue, young people.
Just wait till they see LPs.
Yeah, gramophones.
Oh, sorry. Okay, oh my gosh. When you said LPs, I'm thinking, people know about Let's Plays, Magic. What are you talking about?
No.
Record date, March 1st, 2014. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.